You may proceed.
Good morning, Judge Fletcher, Judge Van Dyke, Judge Pez. Good morning. Steve Sims here for Western Towboat. And I'll take 10 on argument reserve 5. So Section 8 of the standard towing agreement between the parties does require Vigor to hold Western harmless for damages caused by any alleged negligence, including the amount of the Vigor's insurance deductible. That's the question the court wanted us to take up. Here's where Judge Martinez got it wrong to start. And if the court goes to the opinion on summary judgment, Judge Martinez at page 26 quotes Dillingham Tug. We'll hear a lot about Dillingham Tug today. And he says, on the contrary, Dillingham determined the party's insurance provision would not have paid for the loss of use and so on. But if the court goes back to Dillingham, which is at page 1090, the quote is, similarly, in the case at hand, the hull and machinery insurance obtained would not have paid for the loss of use. Dillingham was talking about hull and machinery insurance, not the range of insurance that we know that Vigor applied for, required by the towing agreement. How do we know that they applied for that insurance and got it? Because their insurance carrier paid it off. The $500,000 that was paid, leaving the $100,000 deductible, the court's question, is Vigor responsible for the deductible? Dillingham says yes, because the towing contract, Section 8, requires Vigor to fully indemnify, defend, buy insurance for everything, including environmental damages, which this is alleged to be.
So I think I have an idea about your, we might have some specific questions, but one question that occurred to me is, you know, let's assume both parties, as I read this, both parties had to have insurance that would cover, for instance, pollution, environmental liability, and risk. So at the end of the day, as I read this, it says, we're not going to sue each other. We're going to look to our own insurance for our damages. But in a situation like this, where the government comes and says, we want you to do X, we want you to do something, or even comes and says, we're going to give you a fine, say, which insurance? So in theory, both insurances would be on the hook for that. It's not really before us in this case, but under these provisions, how would you figure out whose insurance is going to pay? Because I imagine both insurances would sit there and be like, you pay.
The environmental did. Somebody did. We know they did because that was a testimony at trial. The insurance.
Right. But I mean, at the end of the day, they may have paid. Maybe they should have held off and hoped that the Tug's insurance, the Western's insurance would pay, right? Like, I mean, at the end of the day, what I'm trying to figure out is, because it kind of helps us to understand what was intended here by these provisions, I think. If there's some sort of pollution, let's say there's $1 million worth of pollution, right? And somebody goes and fixes that and wants to charge, and they come back and they present the bill to both, because to Western and to Vigor. And Western and Vigor present the bill to their insurances. Which insurance pays?
For the liabilities of Vigor and the liabilities of Western.
That's the problem. I think you're hitting right on my concern, which is, how do you figure out what's the liabilities of Vigor and what's the liability without looking at fault? The whole point of this is to avoid pointing the finger at each other and saying, you got to pay because, but how do you get away from the fault question? Because which insurance will pay?
Through the contract. That's exactly what was going on here. And Dillingham is very clear, and this is it also at the middle of page 1090, talking about, we believe the reason the court, Fifth Circuit, is sound is not against public policy to enforce an insurance provision in a towing contract. It is economically efficient. We're talking about parties freely negotiated contract, two sophisticated parties, to a towage contract with such provision to effectively insure themselves against loss.
Yeah, I don't think you're... Yeah. I'll try one more time, and then I'll just give up, I guess. But
no, don't give up.
all right. If you have... If there's an environmental loss, and stipulate for me, let's just stipulate that environmental loss is caused exactly 50% by the tug and exactly 50% by the tow. Mm-hmm. All right? You know, it's equal fault on both sides. So equal that nobody could split between the two, right? Which insurance is going to pay for that $1 million of environmental loss?
when
they both have insurance, because they have to have insurance under the contract. So let's assume they both have insurance. Which one's going to pay the $1 million?
When the loss is to do with the barge.
No, this is bigger. From the barge. This is from the barge and the tug ramming into each other because of bad driving by the tug and defects in the barge. Everybody's at fault, equally at fault. And oil goes everywhere. Mm-hmm. And $1 million worth of loss. Who pays for that? Which insurance pays for that? They both have insurance. Mm-hmm. They both have agreed only to look to their insurance. Which insurance pays for that?
You don't
want to say that, because if you say fault, then fault gets brought back in.
It is between the insurance companies. That's the way the contract.
Okay, that's what I'm wondering. So I think your answer would be that just doesn't really matter for purposes of this.
Because
you don't know how that'll be split up, but the insurance companies are going to go have a different lawsuit about that. Here, you can just go to your insurance company.
That's the point. And this was all bargained for. And it's
clear.
The question is,
it was bargained for, but the question is what was the resolution? Judge Martinez reads this as to claims against each other arising out of harms to each other directly and not as to third parties. Why is Judge Martinez wrong?
Because when Your Honor goes to Section 8A, in 10 of the parties, is the insurances identified in this section cover all? All means all. Losses, damages, claims, liability, incident to the services being provided. Now, if this was an incident, what was?
Wait, but then it goes on to say, rather than maintain claims against each other. So that suggests to me, as I think it suggested to Judge Martinez, you injure my party or do you injure my property in some fashion or you cause harm to me, that's a claim I bring against you, which suggests to me that we're talking not about third-party claims but about claims directly of direct injury to each of the two parties.
Yes. Well, there is a claim against Western here. That's what we're talking about. That's what brings us here because Vigor says you, Western, are negligent, therefore pay us. That is a claim against Western because of Vigor claiming a damage. What should be happening is the insurance companies go to each other and they say, well, you know, we're going to have to work this out because both sides have waived subrogation. So whatever has been paid in subrogation, that's all waived. There's $100,000, attorney's fees, losses, something like that. That's all waived.
Yeah. What's the real world consequence compared to the judgment that we've now got? I mean, we're down into the pretty small amounts at this point. Does this change things very much in terms of dollars?
Well, yes, it does. Okay. And it certainly for Western, it's very important because Western never got paid for its work in a bargain for contract that says the money is earned.
That's a separate issue.
Yeah, please. That's a different question.
Yes. And so we've got $187,000. We've got a damage or claimed $100,000, which is not a damage. But then Vigor wants more than that. So I think they want up to $500,000 or something. So, yes, it's a significant amount of money.
But this may be a separate question. Are we finished with any fines that the government may levy?
Well, if the court were to go to the Northern District of California and look at case 322-6101, it would see the consent decree with between Vigor and the United States, under which Vigor promises that it will not sue Western in contribution. And that was a settlement over the economic damages. So that's done.
So whether or not the U.S. finds Vigor, that's off the table. That's what you're telling me.
Yeah, that's off the table. Okay. It's off the table. It's all settled. Now Western has to deal with it. But Western is dealing with the government. It's not Vigor under this Section 8 tow contract that can come back and get money out of Western. And the part of the court's question was,
I understand. So I wasn't aware of this, what you just told us, but you're saying Vigor is settled with the government, and Vigor has agreed that they won't go after Western. And the reason they've done that is because Western is not yet settled with the government?
Correct.
I see. So the government still could, in theory, come after Western separately.
The government being the government is looking for money from Western, yes.
But they've settled with Vigor.
That's correct.
And Western would just be on the hook by itself.
Yes, sir. That's right.
Why would it be on the hook by itself? Why can't it come, on your theory of here, why can't they come after Vigor for that?
Well, that's exactly our theory, Your Honor, which is that under the tow contract, we waive subrogation. The insurance companies pick everything up. If the insurance companies find some way to get contribution, then that's their business. But the tow contract says for the bargain consideration, everybody's going to insure each other. Everybody's going to waive subrogation. Everybody is going to not be here. Let the insurance companies take it out. And the underwriters knew what they were doing. I refer the court to is there 4 minutes
left? Into your rebuttal. So you're about, yes. This is your entire clock, and you're into your rebuttal time. But
okay, I will give you one more case where a court, this was District of Oregon, applied exactly this contract. It is U.S. v. EAI International, 2004 Westlaw, 331-3617, 2004 case, and I looked at the court's question. I said, I got to see whether anybody's treated this language. And sure enough, interestingly enough, the Williamson firm was in here, and the court said, yeah, the contract means what it says. So,
well,
I'll
all
stop
contracts
now.
Mean what it says, and the question is, what does it say? I mean, that doesn't get us very far. If I can detain you for a little longer, and
yes,
that's
sir.
With respect to allocate the fee owed under the contract.
Yes.
There's an argument now that the fee owed under the towing contract should be apportioned, but that was not the argument made in the district court.
We got to the end of the case, and we were all arguing over it's all your fault or it's all your fault. The apportionment, as far as Western was concerned, was, wait a second, where does this come from? It was not an issue that the of the amount of negligence of each. But when you go back to the contract, and Vigor says, well, you know, when there's some negligence, you don't recover. But the tow contract is distinct here. And it says, to the extent. What does that mean? To the extent.
I'm not arguing that for the moment. I'm looking at waiver.
No.
That is to say, this apportionment argument wasn't made in the district court. It's made for the first time here. Isn't that right?
It was, Your Honor, it was not made in the district court because it wasn't an issue before the district court. Judge Martinez
comes... that's my point. If it wasn't made an issue in front of the district court, how can you now make it an issue in front of us?
Because Western was convinced that it was in the clear, 100%, that was going to get paid.
Right, but people do that all the time. They say, you know, we win 100%, but if we don't win, we win 80%.
Comparative negligence was not even a part of the arguments.
Well, I know. That's why I'm asking you this. Why can you now make it if it was never a part of the argument below?
Because it wasn't an issue.
We're asking why you didn't make it an issue. Why you didn't make the alternative argument that, well, we don't think we should have to pay a penny, but if we have to, but if we want to get part of it, we should get, you know, if we are only partly liable, we should at least get whatever amount of our contract that would be that ratio.
We argued that we should get the full amount because we're...
No, that's exactly my point, and you keep saying that's what we argued, and I'm saying, yes, and you didn't argue apportionment, and I'm asking you, why do you get to argue it now when you did not argue it before?
It was never an issue.
That's a fact. I get that. And you're saying it wasn't an issue, but I can now make it an issue?
Your Honor, there are. It was an issue that was brought up first time in the district court. There wasn't even any oral argument on the question of apportionment. It wasn't a question.
Okay. Yeah.
I think. Yeah. I don't want to take up too much. We leave you a little bit of time here. You want to save it?
Yeah. Yes, sir. Right. A minute and 18 seconds, yes.
All right, thank you. We'll hear from Vigor's counsel.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the court. Molly Henry on behalf of Vigor Marine. I'd like to start by addressing the court's question regarding Section 8 of the tow agreement and whether that clause requires Vigor to hold Western harmless for damages caused by Western's own negligence. And unsurprisingly, my answer to that question is no. And I
take us through the text of 8A, where it says intent. It is the intent of the parties that the insurance identified in this section cover all losses, damages, claims, liabilities, and suits incident to the services being provided, and that the party shall look solely to such insurance in sequence of first party before third party insurance rather than maintain claims against each other based upon negligence or fault.
And I understand the court's question regarding intent, and I'm going to answer it directly, but I would point out there's no evidence in the record regarding Clause 8 because Western did not plead the tow contract as a defense to Vigor's negligence claim. So there's no allegation in Western's complaint that Vigor's damages were
released.
Well,
it became an issue at the trial, correct?
No. Clause 8 did not come up one time during the trial.
Well, then how did Judge Martinez reach the decision that he did? I mean, that Judge Fletcher went through.
He ruled on it.
Yeah. Well, yeah, so the issue of the Clause 8 came up two times. Western brought it up two times, not in its pleadings, not in discovery, but in a motion for summary judgment filed before the trial court. Western argued that Clause 8 required Vigor to indemnify it for all damages arising with regard to the National Marine Sanctuaries Act exposure. And what Judge Martinez held was that, no, Clause 8 is what's in maritime lingo it referred to as a typical knock-for-knock clause. And what that does is says that each party is responsible for its own vessel, for damage to its own vessel and its own employees or crew. So in other words, to give the court an example of how that might work, if Western had rammed Vigor's dry dock into the Golden Gate Bridge, under the knock-for-knock clause, under a typical application of a knock-for-knock clause consistent with Judge Martinez's ruling, Western would be on the hook for the damage to the dry dock. That would be on us under the, excuse me, Vigor would be on the hook for the damage to the dry dock under the knock-for-knock clause. That would be on us. But what that clause doesn't cover, and this is consistent with Judge Martinez's ruling and the Dillingham Tug case, is damages caused to the third-party property by one party's negligence.
So the Golden Gate Bridge would be, you're saying, because it was Western's fault for driving it into it, then Western would be on the hook for the Golden Gate Bridge.
Exactly. Under a knock-for-knock, Western's still responsible for its own party's negligent damage to third-party property.
One of the insurances that they have to get is pollution environmental liability insurance. It seems to me like the whole point of pollution environmental liability is both parties have it, and that's typically going to be a third party that got damaged. It's not going to be. I mean, your argument seems to be that this is only about damage. You know, we're saying we won't go after for damage to our own property, right? Basically, what Martina said. The problem is the pollution environmental liability insurance, the fact that they have to get that, that's almost always going to be, I mean, I can't hardly think of a situation where that wouldn't be damaged to other people. You know, the tow boat starts leaking or something. And
sure.
So it doesn't really make sense to me. Plus, the broad language that I think Judge Pius is reading, all suits incident to the service, all losses incident to the services being provided.
Yeah, and I think at that point, each party is responsible for the their own negligence. So, and again, the problem here is that this was not.
It actually says, I mean, it doesn't say anywhere in this that it's only for their own property. It talks about all losses, incident to the services, and it says, and then it says they're going to look to their insurance instead of going after each other for negligence or fault.
Yeah, but that has to be looked at in conjunction with the actual insurances listed in 8B. So,
Why did they have to get pollution and environmental liability insurance?
Well, to the extent that their negligence caused pollution or liability in relationship to the tow. And Your Honor, I'm sorry, I'm at a bit of a loss.
On yours, it would have to be like it would only be pollution and liability damage, say, to the tow from the towboats, like, sprays oil all over, and then they're like, well, you got to clean up the oil off your own tow. I mean, it seems kind of a... Because it says restoration, cleanup, and restoration costs. That seems kind of odd.
I haven't seen a case where a knock for knock has been applied, and certainly Western didn't cite one, and I didn't find one to an incident where there is third-party damage like this. And there's no evidence in the record concerning the intent of this clause because Western didn't plead it as a defense to the negligence action. Quite to the contrary, Western pled and litigated comparative fault, and that is incompatible with an argument that the tow agreement
But the problem, I think, with that is maybe if the district court hadn't reached the conclusion the district court did, then you could claim that they waived it by not making it. But once a district court actually rules a certain way, even if like the parties didn't quite, then I think that issue's square. I think our cases say that issue's before us, right? Because we're reviewing the decision that's up before us.
Well, 2 points to that, Your Honor. First of all, there are due process concerns, and that's why FRCP 8 says that affirmative defenses need to be pled, because by the time summary judgment was brought, discovery was over. So there was no deposition testimony regarding the intent of Clause 8. And second of all, yes, Martinez ruled on the scope of Clause 8.
Why was it necessary for him to reach this issue if it hadn't been raised?
Well, it was raised in the summary judgment motion.
But we went to trial, right?
Well, it went to trial, but Western never... So Judge Martinez decided at summary judgment that this is a typical knock-for-knock clause and does not reach third-party liability. It was never discussed again at trial. It never came up again until Western's post-trial briefing, which stemmed from sort of an epiphany that counsel had on the last day of trial where, wait a second, I'm hearing information about insurance. We don't know which insurers and we don't know on what basis, but Vigor has been reimbursed for some of these costs. And I don't think Vigor is, or Western doesn't think, Vigor is the real party in interest for those damages. And Martinez says, wait a second. I have concerns about the timeliness of this, but let's finish up our last two witnesses and we'll have post-trial briefing. And it wasn't until that post-trial briefing, a month after trial, that Vigor raised this issue saying, Vigor ought not to be able to recover what it has been reimbursed by its insurers. And it became really a collateral source rule argument post-trial.
Yeah, but that's everything above the $100 deductible. I've got a separate question, and that is, was the environmental insurance something that was required under Clause 8, or was it required separately, or was it just done because the parties thought they'd better get it? Well, why was the environmental damage insurance taken out?
Well, I can't speak to what the parties intended with that because there's no evidence about that, and I don't know the answer. But certainly Clause 8 requires both parties to obtain environmental insurance. But what's not in the record is any evidence about which specific policies Vigor received insurance payments on or on what basis those were made. And that was the trouble with
the... So under your theory, which is that, as I understand your theory, is that the insurance, each side has their own insurance, and so, if you trash my tugboat, I'm on the hook for paying for it, even though you trashed it. That's, I think, your theory, basically. Your load, your fault, is what wrecked my tugboat and caused it to sink, but that property is covered by my insurance and I won't go after you. And that's basically the limit of what you're saying this does. Am I right?
Yes, I think that's correct.
Then why does Section 3, B3, say that they're supposed to endorse them as to each other? So why would I have you as the tow endorse me as the tug for my boat? Because if you're, even under your theory, if your tow sinks my tugboat, I got to go to my own insurance. I don't get to go to your insurance.
Yeah, I want to make sure I understand your question before I answer it, but I think it all comes back to fault. So particularly when you're not talking about necessarily the damage to the tug or the tow, you're talking about third-party.
Well, see, that's what I'm getting at.
Yeah.
That could make sense to endorse each other if the point is to try to say, we're not going to sue each other for damage to third parties, so we're going to endorse each other on it. So insurance... to the full extent possible, insurance is going to cover everything, including third parties. But if you're only saying it's going to cover my tug and my tow, under your theory, I don't know why you would have them endorse the other party on the insurance. It makes most sense if you're trying to make sure you're getting as much coverage as possible with insurance so you don't have to sue each other and fall into the final clause.
And I'm trying to think of an example that might help there. So, for example, if one of Western's crew members was injured during the voyage and sued Western under the Jones Act for damages and also sued Vigor under the Jones Act because perhaps it was injured by some unseaworthiness with respect to the tow, under the knock-for-knock clause, Western would be responsible for covering both parties' negligence because it relates to Western's crew member. I hope I'm getting at...
Actually, the language, the next one of these next clauses talks about specifically two damage to crew members on the further allocation under C. And so I think it actually, that would be the point. It's like, not only does my insurance cover my crew members, but your insurance, I'm endorsed on your insurance, and it covers. You heard my question. We'll let the insurance fight that out, but at the end of the day, we're not going to sue each other about that. And the crew member, to me, is like the Golden Gate Bridge. They're a third party.
Yeah.
I mean, is your view like that if the crew member is riding on the tugboat, then that's the tugboat? But if the crew member like is riding on the tow, then it's the tow?
Because it would be Western's crew member. So under your scenario, I think that would be under Western's.
Your theory is it covers property and...
It covers damage to your own property and liabilities of your own crew, correct?
And that's it.
Yeah, I've got a question here. This sounds as though this is a standard clause in these tow contracts, is it? When you say knock for knock, I mean, is this language going to show up in lots and lots of tow contracts?
It is a knock for knock clause is a very common clause in marine contracts, yes.
And when you say knock for knock, are they written the way this one's written?
I've never seen one exactly like that. I haven't compared. Fairly typical to me, but
well, the reason
I don't I, generally
the reason
draft
I'm asking
them, so.
This is it seems to me the scenario we now have with liability to third parties as the underlying issue, this can't be the first time this has arisen. I mean, why isn't there a lot of case law on precisely this question?
I can't answer that, Your Honor, and part of the problem is, and why I don't have great answers for this, is it wasn't an issue in front of Martinez. He ruled on summary judgment that this was not the case, and Western did not appeal that aspect of his ruling, just like it hasn't appealed the aspect of the ruling related to the Marine Sanctuaries Act claims. So it never came up again until post-trial, so there's no evidence in the record concerning what the parties intended by this. And I would agree with Martinez.
Would evidence be admissible at trial? Or?
Yeah, I think it would be.
Extraneous evidence? What is? I don't know the rules in maritime law. Or
I don't know off the top of my head either. In the state of Washington, it would be.
Unless the contract is ambiguous, usually extraneous evidence is not admissible.
Well, certainly Martinez agreed with Vigor that it was not entirely clear how this was intended operate. So. I believe it would be admissible, but it was never raised as an affirmative defense, and it was never worked up in discovery, and it was never tried to the court after Judge Martinez ruled on summary judgment what the scope of it was.
Can I ask a question similar, I think, what Judge Fletcher was asking the other side, which is, it does seem a little odd. It doesn't seem like there's a ton of money at stake. You know, it's $40,000 on the one issue, and so is there something else going on behind this as to why the parties are paying you all to I think he earlier said that your client has already settled with the government, is that right? And has promised not to go after Western for the amount they settled for.
My understanding, yes, Vigor has settled with the government. The latter part of that statement is not my understanding, but I am not as familiar with the terms of the settlement, which was entered recently, but it is a public record. To answer your initial question, which is why are we here and why are we fighting about this? Because it's not really about why a dry dock sank; it's about where a dry dock sank, and I think.
Well, but that's not really. Well, I guess Judge Van Dyke can speak for himself. I think his question is, this is certainly my question, is if are we just fighting about $40,000, $60,000, or is there some huge amount of liability lurking in the wings of the earth that's affecting your behavior?
Judge Fletcher's got my question better than I did.
Yeah, I think it's fair to say that this is the tail wagging the dog, and there is still...
So what's the dog?
The dog out there is still this massive exposure to liability and contribution and indemnity claims out there, the potential for those. And the concern case could have on that.
Can I ask a follow-up question on that? So I thought that might be the case. And if that's the case, and if Western's view of the contract was ended up being what the court concluded, so different than what Judge Martinez, then I assume what would happen is that each party would have to look to their insurances, and then the insurance companies would have to go fight about how to – because this governs the parties, but it doesn't necessarily govern the insurance. The insurance companies would fight about – fault and like relative fault. Is that?
That sounds right to me. I don't know that I'd commit to it on the record because I haven't thought through that scenario, but
not necessarily in this lawsuit. So
no, it's very clearly not part of this lawsuit. Judge Martinez dismissed those claims on summary judgment and neither party has appealed them.
So any claims that NOAA has are still pending out there?
The NOAA claims against Vigor have been settled, and as I understand it, they are still pending as to Western because there's joint and several liability.
So you're concerned that Western might, after it deals with NOAA, might come after Vigor?
I think it's fair to say that Vigor is always concerned about Western's choices in litigation in this case.
We just heard from Western that they would be on the hook by themselves for anything that they had to pay.
I'm very happy to hear that that's their position.
Let me ask you, if I can, about the contribution argument with respect to the fee for the towing. As I understand it, when it was litigated in the district court, it was all or nothing, and there was no argument with respect to whether there should be a contribution in proportion to negligence. Is that argument properly made in front of us?
It is not, Your Honor.
Because?
That argument was not preserved for appeal. The very first time we heard that argument was when Western submitted its opening brief. And it appears to be based on some sort of plain language argument about the words "to the extent." But I think it's fair to say that at the very least there's ambiguity in that term. And this court, of course, is not a test kitchen for new claims.
So let me ask you this. What is it that you want us to do?
We are asking the court to affirm that Western was negligent in its navigation and voyage planning, affirm that Western is not entitled to any tow hire under the contract, and reverse Judge Martinez's finding that Vigor was negligent, and also reverse the post-trial order refusing to apply the collateral source rule so that Vigor may recover all of its damages for the marine sanctuaries.
So you want collateral source rule, and you want a finding, us to reverse the finding that you were in any respect at fault?
Correct.
Could I ask you one other minor question? The judgment, Judge Martinez ordered prejudgment interest, I guess from the date of the interest, the date of the incident, as opposed to when any damages began to accrue.
Correct.
Right?
Yeah, and that date came from Western's proposed judgment.
I thought Vigor had to propose. I thought
both parties.
Judge
proposed.
Martinez ordered Vigor to prepare a proposed judgment. You did. They signed off on it.
Both parties prepared a proposed judgment, and then Judge Martinez entered his own, but it adopted a date that was put forward in Western's proposed judgment.
That just seems wrong. That date just seems flatly wrong.
Well, you know, certainly Western never objected to it in front of Judge Martinez, either before saying, whoops, wrong date in our proposed judgment, or after he entered the judgment, never went back to the court and said, please correct this. And, you know, prejudgment interest is, of course, within the discretion of the trial court judge, and that date is not picked out of thin air. That is the date that the court found that Western negligently navigated the dry dock into the protected marine sanctuary.
Yeah, but typically prejudgment interest is available only from such time as the amount of the liability is determined.
Yeah.
I would agree that is the typical application.
And the reason you care about this is, again, the tail dog thing? Because, I mean, I'm looking at the judgment form, and it's $576, but you're worried about prejudgment interest on millions of dollars or something?
It was an issue Western raised in its appellate brief, so we addressed it. I don't know if that is an instance of the tail wagging the dog.
Okay.
But our response to Western's appeal is that they didn't preserve that argument because they never raised that issue to Judge Martinez, and it was in within his discretion to pick that date.
Well, I think we've taken you well over your time.
I am well
counsel,
over time.
Thank you very much.
Thank
and we'll,
you, Your Honor.
Go ahead and hear from your opposing counsel.
Judge Fletcher, as to your question, why this hasn't come up before, that's the whole purpose of the contract, for the parties not to sue each other. There's one time this language has come up. It's in that Oregon case that I cited. And what happened? Court looks at it, says contract means what it says, game over, we're done. That's why the contract should be enforced. We should not be here.
You begged every question. You said contract means what it says, and what we're trying to figure out, what does it say?
Yes. What it says is that in all circumstances, and the court has read the contract, subrogation waived, mutual insurance, any and all injuries, any and all, not just first party, third party. So any and all injuries. The insurance covers each other. The parties don't sue each other.
So that means if and when the feds come after your client, which I guess they're not finished with, is that right?
No, sir.
They're not finished. Okay. Well, and let's say the feds come after you for $1 million. Under your interpretation of the contract, you can't go against Vigor for any portion of that.
That is correct. And the original lawsuit by Western was for a declaration that we were not responsible because of the insurance contract. If the court looks back at the original complaint by Western, we're the plaintiff, that's what we asked for. So this stuff about never raised it.
Right. And then your insurance companies, in theory, you know, let's say they got hit for $1 million, you got hit for $1 million, then your insurance companies could fight out how they wanted to try to split that. They may, because they're not bound by this language.
Yes, sir. That's what they underwrote. That's what they agreed to. They're gonna take it. They're gonna do with whatever they're gonna do with
it. The same whole fight about fault, but it's between two insurance companies.
Yes, sir.
And to the degree that something that the feds come after you for is not covered by insurance, that's on you.
Then, if it's not covered by insurance, it goes back to the contract. Because the contract says you should have gotten insurance for everything, and if it's not covered, you pay. And so that
was my question. So it's on your client then. Let's assume your insurance is for $1 million, and the feds come after you for two. That difference is on you.
To flip it over, I think if the government came after Vigor and said,
no, I'm after my hypothetical is the government comes after you.
Yes,
because they've settled with Vigor. Government comes after you, your client, for $2 million. Mm-hmm. Your insurance is for one. The additional million that comes out of pocket, that's on you.
If we were supposed to pay, yes.
Okay. You can't go after Vigor for that amount.
If we were supposed to have insurance for it, we're supposed to pay for it. That's clear.
And then if it's above the limits, there's this last clause which says that's when we kind of go back to the old rules of fault.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
And so, Dillingham deals with that.
I just have one last. I have regarding the summary judgment ruling that by Judge Martinez, counsel just said that this clause was not even an issue at the summary judgment ruling. Is that correct?
It was, Your Honor. And it's in this is that quote I started off with at Dillingham Tug. It's at page 26 of Judge Martinez's opinion, and he's talking about the clause, and he says, yeah, but that's Hall and Machinery in Dillingham, so that's why there wasn't a third-party liability. Hall and Machinery is exactly for that. It's not environmental. It's not P&I. You don't even have to talk about the P&I. Environmental insurance is what picked up the tab here, just as the contract was supposed to.
Okay.
All right, counsel, I think we've – any more questions from my colleagues? All right, well, I think we've – thank you both sides for your – vigorous arguments, and we'll turn to the next case.